I've realized that you can't change the world all on your own, but what you can do is inspire and like light a fire in other people to go after what they really care about and do big things for like important reasons and go after it. And when you start inspiring and people go after those things, when you add all that up together, the world does start to change a little bit.
Kia ora koutou. That was Matt Fenn. I'm Matt Raymond.
And I'm Eugene Bingham.
And this is Dirt Church Radio. Interesting conversations with interesting runners. Scott Running is back. They never left, but they're back in stock. The Kinabalu 2.0 with its fantastic beige colorway for the dad energy. They've got the Supertrack 2.0 and the Kinabalu Ultra RC back in stock, along with lots of packs, sealed jackets, weather pants, the pants that we're compelled to wear at Kepler. Not wear, but carry, the poles. Go to scottrunning.nz and get after it because their shoes are fantastic. And
it's good to wear pants in weather.
It is good to wear pants in weather. Have you ever had occasion in a race to wear a pair of seam-sealed pants?
Not in a race, no. No.
No.
But I'm
always reassured that I have them.
Yeah, oh yeah, absolutely, absolutely. But I think generally any weather it's good to wear pants.
Except for very hot weather.
Well, even then, come on.
Or sexy weather.
Family show.
But, you
family
know.
Show, yeah. Oh, exciting.
Yeah, exciting. Scott Running, I couldn't quantify what sexy weather is. I've certainly never seen it. But scottrunning.nz for, check out their amazing, amazing stock. Ultra Spire, too, also back in stock. The Zygos 4, which is the ruler of all packs. They've got the new Epic. They've got the new Ascent. They've got the new... Oh, what's it called? One of the other ones that's awesome as well. But you should go for the Zygos. Stick around for the... oh, my goodness. What is it? The Astral.
Mm.
The woman-specific one. With the mint chocolate chip colorway. Come on. Mm. Incredible.
Mm.
Ultraspire.co.nz for them. I was wearing my Zygos yesterday and just thinking, I love this thing.
We've been wearing Zygos for years.
Really. Yeah, we've been... wearing Zygos for the longest time.
Mm. Wild things.
Yes.
Don't forget you can use that code DCR2021. DCR.
Yep.
It's very easy to remember. DCR, Dirt Church Radio, 2021. What's that? That's the year. Look, you get 15 months membership, VIP membership for the price of 12. And one of the great things about VIP membership, you can basically earn your money back. Well, you get the free 3 months anyway. But if you pop into this store on wildthings.club, you get so many discounts across everything in store. And they've got a whole bunch of new brands and gear recently included. Hydra Pack, Radix, Rab, Orange Mud Packs.
Yeah.
PLBs. Obviously, if you're going to go wild, you know, and go deep, deep, deep wild, like not a loop around in the backyard like we haven't to do at the moment. But anyway, if you're going to go wild, get yourself a PLB, honestly, worth it.
So that's
it.
Personal locator beacon.
Beacon, yes. And this one's a seriously tiny one, but you get a big discount with it. They've got the
Fantastic.
Ultraspire packs as well. So look, wildthings.club, sign up for the VIP membership, get your 15 months for the price of 12. Everyone's happy. We get a little thanks to Rob.
Yep.
And you get your discounts and you basically earn your money back. Go for it.
Love it.
Mm.
It goes something like further, faster, there in Christchurch. Rocky is hairy and so is Badger. Jules is nice and Jacob is delicious. Go further, faster now.
Oh, further, faster, there in Christchurch. Rocky is hairy and so is Badger. Jules is nice and Jacob is delicious. Go further, faster now.
Church Radio.
Episode 170 of Matt Church Radio.
I mean, I asked for another Matt, and did I? And we delivered. You delivered.
Not enough Eugenes.
That's right. That's right.
Oh, my goodness. We've just wrapped up a fantastic conversation with Matt Finn, who will be... We'll talk about what he's doing, and we'll get to it later in the podcast. But as you're probably listening to this on the Wednesday, he'll be starting off on quite the adventure.
Quite the adventure. He's going to be running virtually nonstop. He's only allowed to stop for 2 hours at a time.
Yeah.
Max, he's got to run minimum of 100K a day. He's going to be running until he gets a million comments on a social media post. And he's doing it all to get us talking about mental health and suicide. Yeah. And, you know, I am blown away by how, you know, by this journey that he's on and getting people talking. It's incredible, isn't it? It's beyond just fundraising, which, you know, not to take anything away from people doing fundraising efforts, which is fantastic as well. But this is something else, isn't it? It seems big.
Absolutely, absolutely. I feel in awe of it as well, especially for one who is, you know, in the springtime of his life.
Yeah.
And you know, we'll go through the bio and stuff later on the podcast. But first, I mean, Eugene, we went for a run this morning.
Oh.
And how good was that?
Loved it.
I think it's been in the last 100 days, probably the third time we've seen each other in the flesh.
Yeah.
And, just fantastic. It was a beautiful morning.
When was the last time that we ran on trails together? You know, we've done the runs that we've done. We did that loop up along the ridgeline. It's back before W2K, isn't it, that we actually ran trails together?
Yeah.
Oh, and I loved it. It was brilliant. Brilliant, brilliant.
So a good six months or so, and it was just a lovely thing. I mean, what a week. It's felt like this weekend, you know, I did two runs with people. This week on Saturday, I went out as well there was a group of 10 of us. Obviously, it was outside. It's within the rules, et cetera, and just how odd it felt. I must admit, I was like, "Whoa, this is a bit," you know. But man, I miss human contact. Hey, it's really I feel so lucky to have actually been able to engage.
Yeah, yeah. I went for a walk on Saturday. You know, I'm trying to do my best recovering. Yeah.
You're still recovering. I mean, how was that? How was your, did you do? Did you do the virtual park run?
I did the village virtual park run on Saturday. I walked with Suzanne, which was nice. And then, as I said, really enjoyed our run this morning on the trails. It was good to smell the pine cones, pine needles, and, you know, feel the dirt on my soles. Matt Grills last week, he got a lot of people talking.
He did. He had a lot of people talking. I think much like this conversation we've just had, it was about running, and it wasn't about running at all. It sparked off some really interesting discussion around bodies, body image, you know, like a whole lot of stuff, really important stuff. And what a guy. Again, it's not often that I go back and listen to the podcasts. But I went for a run the other morning and listened to Matt, and it was really good. It was just
I saw somebody comment, you know, how refreshing to hear from someone who obviously doesn't care what other people think about him. He does what is important to him, what's right to him, and the way that he, you know, that manifested itself in the way that he took on jobs, decided, no, that's not for me. I want to do something else. And he did it. You know, the easy option is just to stay there and trudge on. And I thought that was spot on. And like you said, his bringing up that issue of body image around what are we as runners? You know, I don't look like a runner. I don't feel like a runner, which is something that so many of us struggle with but don't talk about. And, you know, thank you to him for raising it and getting people talking.
Absolutely. It's interesting too. One of the funnier things I saw was one of the comments on Facebook. Oh, he does have quite a lot of tattoos, doesn't he? It's like he's known as the tattooed runner.
For tattoo a reason.
Runner. He is. He has about a million tattoos.
Yeah. And, he was definitely rivaling Carl Reed. He looks untattooed, doesn't he? In comparison.
Absolutely. I mean, right. So, I mean, I guess on to our main, our conversation this week. Also, you know, touched on body image, touched on, centers very heavily around mental health, centers very heavily about discussions around mental health, which is what we actually need to be doing. And some of the, you know, the discrimination around it, which I was, you know, quite angered by, actually. I didn't recognize that sort of went on. Matt Fenn, I mean, his bio, he's an athlete, started off playing, you know, professional cricket. And then he talked about, you know, as you do, going on from professional cricket to powerlifting, you know, because they're similar. he's an athlete mental health advocate, and he works with I Am Hope mainly to raise awareness and shift stigma around mental health in Aotearoa. In March of this year, which feels like 400 years ago, Matt ran 654 kilometres around the domain, and that's 1 kilometre for every New Zealander who lost their life to suicide in the last 12 months. And he broke a New Zealand distance running record in the process. He's done other...
As well as the number of bones.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. I mean, we'll get into it as we go along, but he's done a lot of other things since. And when you consider the fact that this man is 23 years old, it's sort of, it really, you know, it's quite an incredible story.
Yeah, and what he's about to embark on down at the viaduct. Well, he's, you know, as you listen to this, he's about to start this afternoon, if it's Wednesday morning. You know, and it's going to be 10 days of slog, but he's trying to make it fun as well. So, and there's lots of ways you can get involved. So, yeah, have a look out for it. Right. Stuff you should know. Stuff you should know. This isn't really a stuff you should know, but it's something I wanted to cover off from last week.
I didn't know it.
I didn't know it. So last week we had the latest installment in the trilogy so far of Jenny Hurst's greatest runs ever, and I think that's her third, but this one was her 30th wedding anniversary run with her husband Pete, who's also known as Batman, and we wondered aloud, how did he get that name? Well,
yeah,
Jenny's come through with an answer.
So is it, so Jenny's wrote in, she goes, by the way, Batman is because he didn't want to use his real name on social media. And being a Batman fan, he went for Bruce Wayne, which Facebook wouldn't allow, so he became Bruce Wayne. And then a friend of theirs, Kunal, a friend of ours, in particular, just started calling him Batman all the time. Every year we do a superhero run from Deep Creek Brewery and he dons his Batman costume.
There you go.
There we go.
We thought that was something you needed to know, so we included it in Stuff You Should Know. But, you know, there has been some races too. I think let's just get into them.
Let's do it.
The Valley Ultra on the West Coast. And Craigieburn Ranges out of Arthur's Pass there. Apologies if I'm being geographically challenged. But boy, oh boy, the weather gods of the West Coast delivered. It looked wet.
And cold and oily. You know, like, we saw some very dedicated marshals and some incredible aid stations out there.
Gave me flashbacks to Wu2K aid station with the snorkel and mask and wetsuits. But
absolutely.
Shout out to them.
Everyone had a good time probably after the fact. But look, in the Whole Hog, which was the 49-kilometre main event, Nancy Jang took it out 4:58.24, Robin Leash in second in 5:01.10, and Maureen Stanchiewicz in 5:35.47.
Daniel Jones won the men, 4:03.32. Good to see him getting amongst it again. Danielle Dennison, 4:27.43, and Gregory Bassam, 4:28.46.
That is quite a margin. Geez Louise. So the
Piglet,
which
is 24... I wonder if he ran in his Vaporflies.
That's right, probably. Ran in my socks. Didn't want to slow myself down. The Piglet, which is 24 kilometres, it's... And taking that was Georgina Thornton in 2:30.47, Estelle Arundel in 2:32.14, and Fiona Dowling in 2:36.26.
And in the men, DCR alumni Andy Good, 1:54.02, and coach extraordinaire. Stephen Melton, 2:09 flat, and Hayden Zervos, 2:10.42 for third.
And in the teacup, which was 10 kilometres, and I don't know why they call it the teacup, maybe because of Piglet, teacup Piglet. Anyway, 10-kilometre run, Miriam Clark, 59:44, Sammy Burke in 1 hour, 17 seconds, and Pip Baker, who is a junior, 17 under, in 1:10.40.
And for the men, Scott Smith, 56:16, And Ben Ferrier, who's also a junior, 59.08, and Lance Barnes, 104.06.
So, I'm going to struggle to pronounce this, so could you pronounce it, please?
Sure, Kostakoski. Ha! Jokes. Kostakoski. So, I just want to put that in there for Andrew again. Sure enough, it did get it. Rile him last week, as I predicted. Anyway, came up last week in our chat with Matt Grills, one of the best races in Australia. Commences on Boydton Beach at Twofold Bay near Eden in southern New South Wales, and finishes 240 kilometres later at the highest point in Australia. Just 50 runners get to run it each year, and they've got 46 hours to complete the race.
So, again, atrocious conditions.
Oh, man, very, very un-Australian.
Yeah, rain, cold, all the things you don't expect. And there were some exceptional results from previous DCR alumnos, Kai Bretz and Stephen Redfern. With that, Joe Ward won in 25.14.48, with Andy McConnell second in 25.33.48. Kai Bretz made the podium, 27.08.36 for his third place, and Andy Hayden was 29.17.33. He was fifth in an epic battle with Stephen Redfern, who came in at 29.17.50, just 17 seconds apart. So, and I mean,
amazing.
It's a photo finish.
Yeah. And Stephen was pursuing him, chasing him down, and then Andy's crew noticed that they were coming and sort of were like giving them the hurry along. So after, 29 hours of running, they're in this sprint. Incredible. Yeah. So in the women's race, Marie Connor, first female finisher, fourth overall, 28.45.45. She led the female field at all the checkpoints and was consistently between fourth and sixth place overall. And then she moved up the field in the later stages. Donna Urquhart, second female, and 11th overall in a time of 31.18. And Kristen Brace was third in 32.20.48.
Wow. Oof. Amazing.
Mm.
It's South Africa. This weekend, it was the Ultra Trail Cape Town. And this, we got this from Iron Far, which is where you should go for your race fixes. It was an American sweep atop the podium, where Courtney DeWalter and Jim Walmsley won without a challenge from the rest of their respective fields, but certainly faced the challenges of the race's unforgiving terrain. It says that the 97-kilometre course features 4,560 metres, which is 15,000 feet, for those of you who speak in the old money, a vertical gain as it makes a way amongst the famed trails and around Cape Town. Runners reach the race's high point of 1,000 metres, 3,300 feet above sea level, in the race's first quarter. Ouch. With the route alternating between technical rock-laden terrain and more runnable trails. So, amazing results. And, and I guess as well, with the current context, there was a lot of anxiety to get out of South Africa from a lot of those athletes afterwards. Goodness
right.
me.
Let's hit this button.
Greatest run ever, which is the part of the show where we ask you to write into us and tell us your greatest run ever. It doesn't have to be a race or a mountain summit. Might just be a run around the block. You know, that time that you rescued a sea mammal. Something that sung to you for some reason. You can send them in to us at Dirt Church Radio. And this week we actually do have someone who rescued a sea mammal on a run. It's a first for us. I know. Yeah, I want to see more animal interactions in the greatest runs ever from here forward, because this sets the bar pretty high. This is from Eve Southern. I've been thinking about my greatest run ever for a while now, and although I've run quite a bit, I didn't have any runs that were jumping out as being exceptional. I've had lots of challenging runs where the wheels have fallen off, tears have been shed, and I'm never doing that again moments, some cool events, some beautiful trails and achievements, but none of them felt like it was my greatest run ever. Until now. It started off as a regular Sunday run. Actually, not totally regular, as we were road running. I love me a good trail, so this was a little unusual. I met a friend at Plimerton to run 10 kilometres before meeting our run crew for our Sunday group run. We opted a pre-run to add some distance as we were both training for some events. It was a cold, calm morning. We set off from Plimerton towards Munna. I guess that's on the Wellington coast, isn't it?
Yeah.
Chatting away and settling into a rhythm, we trotted along the coast. About 1 kilometre into the run, we noticed something in the water on the beach close to the shore. Holy shit, it's a dolphin and it's floundering in the shallow water. We jumped down off the footpath and onto the beach. My friend rang Doc, and I ripped off my shoes and ran into the water. It was an instant reaction to go to help, but then I realized once I was out there, I had no idea how to refloat a dolphin. Which sounds like an obvious, you know.
Well, I don't know.
No, it's a, I mean.
Pull out your emergency blanket. I don't know.
I love this. I put my hands around it to stabilize it from the waves and noticed straight away that one of its fins was stuck in the sand. So I wiggled it slowly up and out of the sand. And then once again, it was free. I guided it towards the deeper water. At this point, the dolphin blew out its blowhole at me, which is probably quite frightening. But I was also in awe that I was actually holding a dolphin, which is probably something that not many people
never done that on a run.
And I love this part. I don't really know what I thought that a dolphin would feel like, but I was surprised by how smooth and solid it felt. It was also quite heavy, although not a big dolphin. It was an effort for me to get it out of the sand. In the deeper water, the dolphin moved away and was swimming on its own, so I got out of the water and watched it for a bit. Unfortunately, it went along the beach and got stuck again. So out I went for a second time into the freezing Wellington water and guided it back out into the deeper water. This time, I took it further out and sent it on its way, willing it to go out and find its pod. We stayed on the beach to watch it for a bit. Doc was sending someone down to keep an eye on it, so I put my shoes back on and we decided to carry on running and circle back past the beach on our way back to meet the crew. I think I was running on a bit of adrenaline at that point. I couldn't feel my feet or legs from the coldness of the water. We came back past the beach after about 10 minutes and the dolphin was still out in the deeper water. And, you know, we were really happy with that because it kept on swimming. The rest of the run with our Sunday run crew and Jim, my awesome Hunterway, lots of chats, no more dolphins, and a cup of tea at the big salami to finish. Later that day, the whale rescue team contacted me and there'd been no more sightings of the dolphin I rescued. They think it was a dusky dolphin and could have been part of the pod that they rescued a couple of days before. So my greatest run ever is far from an extraordinary running experience. I think it actually is one of the more extraordinary running experiences that happened while out of my run. I don't think I'm ever going to be able to top a dolphin rescue run anytime soon. I think that sets a bar.
Eve, that is just amazing. And I, you know, see on your social media and so on that you have some fantastic runs. So you saying, oh, I've never had a greatest run ever. You know, I'm sure you could have pulled something out of the hat, you know, but then you deliver that. Holy flippin' moly. That's amazing. Something I can say I have never, ever, ever done on a run is save a dolphin.
No.
Amazing. Just quick explanation for any overseas listeners. Doc is not the doctor. It's the Department of Conservation. She didn't ring the doctor. She rang the Department of Conservation, which is our government agency that helps marine mammals and other native flora and fauna. Wow. Okay, the rest of you, challenge is on. Come on. Send them in. Right, on with the show. Matt Fenn, who is an athlete mental health advocate, he is setting out on an extraordinary mission this week, and it will carry on for the next 10 days. He wants to run until he's going to keep running until he's had 1 million comments on a social media feed. It is all in aid of getting us talking about mental health. So we chipped in and we had a great conversation with Matt about mental health, about what drives him, about what got him involved in these challenges. And this is not his first rodeo. He's done some extraordinary challenges. Turns out, he's a man with thoughts and processes way beyond his years, which I hope that doesn't sound condescending, but you know, he blew us both away, didn't he, Matt? And here we go. Have a listen to this conversation with Matt Fenn.
Dirt Church Radio.
We have a very special treat on Dirt Church Radio. We are joined from the mighty West Auckland by Matt Fenn. Matt, kia ora, how are you?
Kia ora, guys. I'm good. How are you going?
Very well, thank you. I mean, wow, you've got a bit on.
feels like it.
Yeah, it must do. Look, I mean, December 1st, you're setting off on a really incredible mission. Can you tell us what you're doing?
So I wanted to push myself further than before, and I didn't know what that looked like for a long time. And we played with a lot of ideas. I think the first time I thought about what I wanted to do for this big end of year event, I think I typed in how far is it to the moon on Google. That was the ideology behind it. Like, let's go bigger than you could ever imagine. That's a very long way, by the way. That might be next year rather than anytime soon. And I landed on the idea of running until we reached a point, something external, something important. So on December 1st at 2 p.m., I'm going to start running, and I'm not going to stop until we've reached 1 million comments on one social post. And the reason behind that being all around raising awareness around mental health and encouraging people to take action and speak up around what's really important and make a difference in that area. And it doesn't change everything all at once, but what it does do is show people that there are people out there that care and want to make a difference. And all those little comments and all those little actions by people start to build up, and it does become actual change eventually.
So in terms of the, okay, so in terms of the comments, like you're building up to 1 million comments on a social media post, I'm guessing that some of those comments, people are going to be talking to each other, you know, and you're going to be running. So it's not going to be people talking to you. I mean, some people are going to be talking to you, but they're going to be talking to each other.
Yeah, and I think that's the idea, is it, there's no right answer. And that's kind of the same with that mental health conversation, is everyone deserves a voice and has a voice. And there's a platform there for people to contribute and open up that conversation and start it. And in the same way that there's also no pressure for people to have a big conversation, someone comments an emoji, but it's still that act of doing something and contributing in some way. And that's the first step to having a bigger impact.
Where, I mean, this is the thing. It is a long way to the moon. It's a long way to 1 million comments on a social media post. I mean, talk us through the logistics. Where are you going to be running?
So I'm doing Wynyard Quarter.
Right.
And I'm doing a 1 kilometer loop around Wynyard Quarter, which people shudder at, which is strange to me, because I probably prefer running in circles. It's certainly a lot easier to fuel and logistically. I can't even imagine doing that distance point to point. And I guess we're looking at, one thing I wanted to do as well is I wanted to set a benchmark standard that we're going to hit, I'm going to plan on doing no matter what. So I've sort of committed to doing at least 1,000K within 10 days. And we sort of were like, okay, well, how does that look in terms of where does it stack up? And so we started talking to Guinness, and we're like, how far would you want to set a record for the longest single stage run ever? Because there's a lot of people that have gone out there and run huge distances, but a lot of it is, oh, I did this then and I did this then. What do you want? What parameters do you want in place to ratify that? Because there's 6-day races and there's this and that, but what is single stage? What is hitting it through the night continuously? And so we arrived on the fact that anything over 1,036 kilometers, because of what someone had previously done, and you've got to do at least 100K every single day, not averaged out, but every 24 hours, and you can't stop or be stationary for more than 2 hours at a time. Which is pretty brutal.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. All right. It's a lot to, again, and I've said this the last couple of podcasts we've had, that word epic gets chucked out a lot in terms of endurance running or endurance sport, but that throws up some pretty heady logistics. Like you are never going to get more than 2 hours sleep, or, and you're going to need time either side for personal administration and fueling and everything like that. So,
yeah.
I mean, how, you said, we were talking before, you said, you know, today's handoff day. So we were recording this on a Sunday. So you've obviously had all the planning and everything like this. And I mean, who have you got on your team? I mean, how many people do you have involved sort of going to be supporting you?
Oh, there's a central group of probably 5 other people. And everyone has their role. It's definitely not the first challenge I've done, and I've learned over time what works and what definitely doesn't work. And we sort of joke about the idea that we started out sort of bootlegging everything, and now it's getting to the stage, and there's still obviously a long way to go and a lot to work on. But it starts to feel a little bit more like a Formula One team now. You know, everyone's got a predetermined role. There's times, there's cutoff dates, and it's all about optimization and efficiency and huge Google Docs and months of planning and stuff like that, which is necessary to make these things even get to the start line, let alone be able to put me in the best position to actually try and do them.
We're on a podcast, so people can't see it, but you behind you, you've got a bunch of Eastlight folders. So now I imagine them filled with spreadsheets of like aid stations and, you know, who's going to be crewing you at what point and so on.
You should
logistics
see the,
blow my mind.
The crew schedule, well, when you're thinking about 10 days of 24 hours a day, for safety, you need at least two people there at all times doing 6-hour shifts. That's about 500 hours. Mm-hmm. Worth of friends, family, everyone coming down, trying to keep me alive, essentially.
Yeah.
And trying to organize all that with, and everyone's got their own stuff going on.
Yeah.
And that's pretty amazing. And that there's moments where I have to pinch myself that the idea that people would be willing to support and take the time out of their own lives to come and do this and contribute is huge.
But isn't that a nice metaphor almost for the kaupapa that you're pursuing? You know, mental health, you know, you've got to get, you know, you reach out for help. And I know from doing my own missions, I find it hard to ask for help logistically doing a run. You know, you've had to push through that awkwardness and ask people for help. As I say, what a metaphor for the kaupapa.
Yeah, and it definitely doesn't come naturally. I think part of it is these things become your baby. Like the idea for this started at least 6 months ago. And so through that, there's been COVID, there's been this and that. We've changed the plans, moved things around. It started out as a different idea. And especially when it's not just a number, there's that creative element of that ideology behind it that's obviously important. And it's so based around social media and, I mean, at the end of the day, it's not so much about the running. It's a platform, a vehicle to elevate the cause, which is really important.
Mm.
And so all the promotion side of it is actually huge as well. If no one knows about what you're doing, then you're not having the impact you set out to have in the first place. So that's obviously creative important. And being able to trust people is huge.
Mm.
And being able to put literally your life in their hands somewhat. We talk about the idea that in terms of planning, it's my job to take care of the crew and everyone around them before I start. And then once we hit the start line, it switches and it's their job to take care of me.
Mm.
And that's kind of how I think of it, of how can I make their lives easier and better up until the start? And then we change places.
Mm. Then you just have to hand over control.
Which is really difficult.
Yeah.
Because your mind is still like, people to think about like, what do you think about through these things? And I just do the math. Like I spend days just going, oh, it's this many kilometers. It's this minute, this pace, this mileage, this. I look at my watch way too much. And then that's all you think about really.
Yeah. Yeah. One foot in front of the other. As you mentioned, and as we've talked about on the podcast, this is not your first rodeo by any stretch. And just one of your epic missions was running 654 kilometers last year. Do you want to tell us about that and what that was about?
It was this year, Eugene.
You're kidding me.
It was March.
Oh no,
March.
that is yeah. Blowing me away because it was like I'm sure that was last year. That is
it was 400 Earth years ago in terms of how long 2022 has been. 2021.
Seriously, I thought that was last year. Oh, no. Yeah. And I even ran with you for a lap or two. So, no. Oh,
I'm not sure we could call that running.
It was. You were running. You were doing awesome. But anyway, can you tell us about what that was and why that number?
Yeah. So, I mean, I'll probably go slightly further back because of that. So the first challenge I ever did was 5 50Ks in 5 days. And that was a fundraiser for the charity Cure Kids because I had a family friend that has cystic fibrosis and that's sort of what kicked it all off. That was a terrible idea. I managed to finish it, but it was very ugly. We were driving around from Taupo to Auckland to Mount Maunganui, all around the place. We got in at midnight. I was battered and bruised and it was not good. But we got there and finished it. There was a big gap in between challenges because I went away and did other things. And then COVID hit and I realized that I really wanted to do these things again, I guess, and build on it and learn more and try and have more of an impact, I guess. So October last year, so just over a year ago, I decided I was going to run for 24 hours wearing a 24 kilo vest. That was tough. I did it around the track, and I managed to do 107.2K. And it was pretty brutal. I was heavy then as well. I was probably 114 kilos. I was off the back of doing powerlifting. And in hindsight, I think that's really helped. But from there, we were doing the promotion on the radio for that. And they asked me what sort of progress I thought we'd made in mental health in New Zealand. And I said, you know, the fact that we're having this conversation is obviously huge progress, and that's great. But there's still 654 suicides each year that we know of. And that's a huge number, and one is too many, you know. And they cut that bit out, which shocked me because it was pre-recorded. And that really played on my mind for a long time. And I said after that run, I was like, oh, I'm not going to, I'll ease off doing the challenges and I might do this or do that. And it's kept bugging me. And I thought that whole idea of raising awareness and sort of staying away from the financial side of give a littles and things and doing things differently, especially when you're going to do a lot of challenges, you know, it's trying to have an impact in a different and new way that excites people. And so I came up with the idea of running 654 kilometers and doing something so big that the media and people would have to report about it. And because it was for that reason, they'd have to not promote, but talk about that issue and that number and tie that in and almost force their hand. They didn't want to do it. And that was my goal. Obviously I wanted to hit the distance, but I'm the only one that cares about that. No one else cares if I run 300K or 600K or whatever. But that was the goal. And we had a Seven Sharp feature. I was very new to the PR branding side of all this. And we had a feature on Seven Sharp. And within half an hour of that airing, I had 20 people around me at the domain running with me, having been alone most of the day. And from there, probably thousands of people turned up at different times across that week. Which was huge. It made a massive impact, and I wasn't expecting it.
You even had the army turn up.
Yeah, the Air Force. Yeah, and mates with a lot of those guys now. A lot of those guys will be coming down to this one and everything. Yeah, it's great. And you met so many cool people and so many friendships, and I think that's part of it. Is it's so cool the way it connects people. But there is at most media outlets in New Zealand, there's an article about that event, and that was the goal, and that was huge for me, and hopefully had somewhat of a positive impact. It's not going to change everything or solve all these problems, but it's one step in the right direction, and that's sort of the goal with each one of these. Is you're going for a run. You're not going to change the world, but you can make it a tiny bit better through something specific, and that was the goal.
And I mean, that idea that you have, that it's not about raising money, it's about raising voices, it's raising conversations. I think that's really, you know, it's going beyond just dollars, isn't it? It's so easy just to chuck some money at something, never think about it again, but what you're doing is you're getting conversations going.
Well, that's what I want people to show up and then on the drive home then still be thinking about it, still be thinking about how they can have a positive impact and how they can do this. And when you're lying in bed at night thinking about all sorts, you come back to all that. And like you said, it doesn't sort of close the door. You don't donate and you're done. And it feels a lot more pure in some ways. Obviously, fundraising and stuff is great.
Of course.
And it has a massive impact. Yeah. Like, amazing. And love and support everyone who does it. But I think a lot of it for me as well is I felt like there was, I guess, somewhat a bit more freedom. And I could be more creative, it certainly takes the pressure off in some ways, not others. But it allows you to go after these things and be creative with it. You know, I always wanted to work in advertising growing up, coming up with ideas for adverts and things. And then went and played cricket to a high level. And then I found myself years later sort of combining elite sport and those two things together without realizing it.
It's certainly, I'm just reflecting on what you're saying in terms of, it's hard, you know, and it's hard to hear. It's hard to hear you tell us that, and tell the people listening that you went on the radio and they cut that bit out. You know, like, it's frankly, I find it offensive, you know, and I think I find it offensive because I'm a mental health clinician. I've been a mental health clinician for 21 years. And you're so right. It's easy to give money. It's so easy. And working, you know, and those of us who work in the field, you give money to mental health. It's like, what specifically are you doing? And those problematic, you know, the fact that you can't have a talk about suicide, you can't say the word suicide, you can't mention the word suicide by law, isn't it, Eugene? There's a coroner's...
There's restrictions in the Coroner's Act around what you can report.
So do you know what I mean? And there's very kind of draconian ways around that. It's sort of staggering that in the 21st century that we can, that we still kind of have those deeply held ideas. And sorry to, I mean, I'm not going on a bit of a rant. I'm just sort of supporting what you're saying, but it's just fantastic that you're saying, hey, look, I'm not raising money for anything. What I'm doing is just raising the conversation and it being out there.
Yeah. I guess part of that as well is, I think it can get quite with charities and everyone disagrees about how we should go about this or that. And people ask me, like, so what do you think about this strategy versus this? And it is a strategy to try and contribute and make a difference. And I sort of come back to that idea that we can't all agree on how we should be doing stuff, but we can all agree something has to happen.
Yeah.
And so that's sort of my thinking is, if it's let's just make small steps in the right direction. And enough people start doing that, we start to get somewhere.
Yeah, definitely. So, I mean, tell us, you know, you've mentioned, you know, I did the math, you know, like you ran 107 kilometers at a combined weight of 127 kilos, 137 kilos. You're saying you're playing cricket to a high level. What was your background in sport and running particularly? Is it always something that you've done, or is this relatively new for you?
I was a very chubby kid growing up and wasn't great at sport, was very passionate and loved it and was all about being part of a team and enjoyed it. But I was always that sort of chubby kid. And then one summer I grew about 6 inches and all of a sudden was the tallest kid in school, and things changed quite quickly and I was good at sport within a term of school. I remember... I was watching one summer holidays. I was watching the 2010-11 Ashes series, and I would watch it. And then at lunch and tea, I would go down to the local cricket nets and bowl as fast as I could, and then come back and watch more. And that was my summer. Meanwhile, I was growing and growing and growing. And that weight just sort of all came off, and all of a sudden I was an athlete, whatever that meant. And started playing up school grades and things kind of happened quite quickly and naturally. And in hindsight, very much went to my head. It became that I had very little, I guess, self-confidence and self-esteem because I was the chubby little kid, and then went in the complete opposite direction because I went searching for it and didn't know better. And was playing 5 sports, doing athletics, rugby, cricket, basketball, everything. And then I started to specialize in cricket after a while, just because it was all around, just I wanted to go somewhere with it, I guess. And in hindsight, I've always questioned that decision because of where we are now. But at 16, I moved to the UK to play cricket full time alone, left family here and just moved over. Was sort of finishing school on the side whilst doing that. And within 2 years, I hated it. And it wasn't even a decision to stop playing. But it was so tied up in my identity that when something didn't go right, it was the end of the world. And that had a huge impact on my mental health and sort of drove me for why I care so much now, I guess. And it wasn't until I went through a really hard time mentally and struggled for months. And I went to the gym. I was going to the gym maybe once a week and catching up with a mate who actually owned the gym. And he knew me quite well by that point. And we were having physiology discussions and talking about stuff like that. And we were talking about different records and stuff. And he brought up about the idea that of someone running a marathon without training for it. And my opinion was sort of like, you know, it's mostly mental if you're able to not get injured. Or, yeah, I think we'd watch Run, Fat Boy Run or something. You know, you can death march it through it if you have to. And you can do that. And he disagreed and we went back and forth. And then he said, okay, go do it then. And I think in hindsight, he knew what he was doing. But I didn't and didn't turn down the challenge, took it on the next day. And went and did it. It was not pretty. Probably took 8 hours, but got there. It was one of those run, stop, but we got through it. And still, I mean, to this day, I use the term I hate running. I don't hate running, but I don't enjoy the physical act a lot of the time, if that makes sense. But I enjoy the way it makes me feel for the other 20 hours a day or whatever. And I think I love the community and the opportunities it's given me and things like that so much that although I don't necessarily enjoy the physical act, I also love the fact that it's something that I've never loved doing, but I do it anyway. And there's a power in that. It's not always fun and nice, but I still get out there and do it. And so I guess I'd always run. And there was a cricket coach we had. Sorry, I'm going a bit roundabout here. There was a cricket coach we had in, I would have been 13. And I was playing in the older team. So I was a bit younger and probably quite soft still, if that makes any sense. That just wasn't ready for that. And we would turn up to training and we would have to do probably more than a 10K run, which as a 13-year-old is huge. And that was before training started. And his idea was we were all a bunch of just little brats. And he was going to break us down so that we built together as a team. And we were just going to be the fittest guys out there. And it worked, but I think I saw, it got me into running and into fitness, but I did see running as like a punishment. And I still talk to a lot of people about that. It's seen as something that's go run laps, go do this. It's something which is inherently not fun.
Mm.
And we spend years as adults trying to reprogram, and then we get to 25 or whatever, and we go, oh, maybe this could be enjoyable. Well, let's start paying to go and do this. And we flip the switch, but I hate that it takes that transition, you know? So I think that's the thing is I stopped playing cricket and I got into these challenges and very much got the buzz. But do enjoy being creative with it, you know, and coming up with different ways we can do these challenges and stuff. And I think that's why I haven't gone and done a whole bunch of races yet. It's definitely on the agenda. We talk about Backyard Ultra next year and things like that. We'll see how I'm feeling. But I'm definitely keen on those things. But I think a lot of it for me is I've very much got the buzz of the planning and the ideas and we can play around and do all these things rather than turning up and competing against other people.
It's a really nice. It's a great way to frame the act of running. Like what is, you know, Eugene and I, we've been kind of talking about this morning and we got to go out for a run this morning and we're both people who will just run. You know, like it's just a part of who we are and we will run and we will train like many, many people. I like how how you frame it. It's a means, of course, it's always a means to an end, but the means to an end is the, you know, it's the mental aspect, it's the endorphin and it's everything. It's almost that emphasizing the engagement. And that's so important. It's a really, you know, like you're not racing, but you're going out and you're going to run a minimum of 1,000 kilometers. just, I don't know.
Have you heard of the concept of misogi? It's a Japanese word.
Yes. Is that the marathon mounts, monks of Mount Hay? Is that that?
Oh,
that
I'm not sure. I think it used to be based around like water ritual purification, and it's evolved in the understanding, I think. The general concept now, which sort of applies more to modern life, is the idea that you do something so hard one day a year that it affects the way you live your life for the other 364 days.
Huh.
And that's the main ideology why ultras are addictive.
Yeah.
Is that the actually doing it sucks, but it improves the rest of your life because I sort of come back to that phrase of the struggle we choose prepares us for the struggle we don't. And when you choose to do something purely because it's hard and you're going to get through it anyway, it builds that resilience and it's a learned skill. And then the rest of life just becomes like a little bit easier. And you just believe in yourself. You know that something such as this huge task ahead of you, but if you just break it down and you start getting on with it, then you get there.
Mm.
It certainly does flow. You're right. It does flow through the rest of, our lives, doesn't it? Look, talk to us about the toll that, you know, you ran that 654 kilometers. I mean, it took a toll on you, right? Like, how was the recovery from that? I understand you got, was it stress fractures, plural?
Yeah, four.
Good.
Yeah, So, I mean, if I go chronologically, so on the very first day, I got a urinary infection. And a lot of that, I think, was stress-induced. I didn't sleep the night before. I was having panic attacks. And so I'd essentially been up for 30-something hours already. I don't know if you've had a urinary infection but while you're trying to run, but it's like you're busting to go to the bathroom and you can't do anything about it until the pills you've got kick in. And they take about 3 hours to kick in. Come the second day, I was excreting iron out of my muscles, so had dark brown urine, which was really worrying because I know that red urine is generally rhabdomyolysis, and that's a deal breaker. You're off to hospital with some push IVs in you. And so I actually had to get one of my mates to come in because I thought I was going to be lying to myself and check the color of my urine. Be like, hey, am I dark brown and dark red look very similar? What do you think? I never thought I'd talk about the color of my urine as openly on national radio and TV as much as I did as well. But people seem to enjoy it. Then there was the second night I picked up a stress fracture in my right foot, what we suspected at the time, which then turned out to be. And it was actually in the top of my foot, which was really interesting. And they got worse and worse. And I bear in mind, I was heavy then. I mean, I'm still heavy now. I'm built like a rugby player. But I was 104 kilos then. I'm about 90 now. My feet were just taking a pounding with every step. And we go through that stage where the muscles just start to turn off once you get, say, past 200K. There's no, like, you can train as much as you want, but when your calves turn off, doesn't matter how well trained they are, they're not doing anything. And so you go from rolling your foot nicely and taking a stride and getting a decent stride into just your foot slapping on the ground every step, no matter how quick you're going. Over time that started to break my feet. And it was about 2 days afterwards. I was fine for probably 48 hours feet wise. And then all the inflammation went away. And I remember very vividly lying on the bed and looking down at my feet. And it was like someone had all of a sudden within 5 minutes just started hammering at them with a hammer, like just going for it, trying to hit nails in. That's what it felt like. And that lasted for a few days.
Wow. I mean, I'm just glad that this was all last year. That's all I'm saying.
I've had plenty of time to recover. We have talked about, I obviously so much of it is the things you don't see behind the scenes and the physio aspect and the prehab and all that stuff is really interesting. But part of what we talked about is the bone density you gain through doing that sets you up to do more things like that. And so I fully expect to break my feet going into this. Like, that's going to happen. But in my mind, that's kind of okay because I know it's going to happen. And pain is something you can prepare yourself for because it's a really familiar feeling. You know what pain is. You experience it daily, probably in small doses. It's more things that are uncomfortable and annoying that get me, things that like the urinary infections and things like that, that are scary. Or the biggest thing was the third night. So I'd barely slept up until then. The whole thing, I'd got 11 hours sleep out of 150 hours. But I very much backloaded that as well. So I probably had 3 hours sleep out of 3 days. And come the third, it was the going into the fourth morning, I had one person on each arm holding me up while I was trying to take steps. It took me a whole hour to do a 1 mile lap. And I was falling asleep standing up, like had my eyes shut, was pretty much unconscious while still, because my body just knew to keep striding. And I was actually locked in my own body. So I tried to talk and my mouth wouldn't move. Like the brain, the signals weren't moving and things like that. And that's happened quite a bit. And even on the second day, my legs and arms got out of kilter. At once I found my arm and my leg. You know, people talk about the fake running pose when someone's arm and leg are both forward. I started doing that accidentally because the pathways just got all muddled up because it didn't know what it was doing.
Wow.
But that was a bit of a nightmare. That was scary. And it's those things which are the unexpected things. People talk about going blind during ultras and things like that. That's the scary stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, I've had a flash of going blind in an ultra. And it was scary because it didn't last long, but it was just a moment of, and it's discombobulating because you're just so, you don't know what's going on. I think it's just, for me, it just felt like I sort of put it down to just a glitch in the system. You're assaulting your body and it's, something's just going, nope, hang on, we're just having a break. Yeah. But you know, you mentioned the preparation in terms of physio and so on. We've spoken recently to Harita Davies, who just completed the 3,100-mile Shrishimnoi race. And she talked a lot about her preparation being meditation and preparing the mind, even more so really than the body, it seemed. How do you prepare for something like this, especially knowing what you've been through for 654 kilometres?
Yeah, that's really interesting you bring up the 3,100-mile race because I can't think of anything worse than that. The idea, because I know they have the six-hour window they have to stop.
Yeah.
And I think that's the worst part because your body shuts down and you have to shut it down and then you have to try and jumpstart it again. And we talk about the hardest part of doing an ultra is getting out of the chair. That's the hardest bit. And if that becomes a bed and for 6 hours time, that's tough. And I think that kind of feeds into that idea of it's that meditation side and that mental element of being able to, I guess, maybe be more in control of your mind somewhat and be more present and mindful of you're going to have to put some things aside and prioritize others at times and things like that. And I feel like I've still got a lot to learn in that area. I feel like I'm really mentally tough when it matters and when the lights go on. But one thing I've had to work on, and it's probably been my biggest work on, is being able to, your 48K into your 50K training run on Tamaki Drive, no one's around. It doesn't matter if you don't do the next 2K. There's very little fitness gains. No one cares. No one's going to know. Everyone's going to still give you plenty of kudos on Strava for doing 48K. That 2K is the most important 2K you'll run in training. And it's the bit that no one sees, no one cares about. But being able to mentally go, I'm going to do this even though I don't need to do this, is huge, so that when the lights do go on, you have so many more gears that you didn't realize. And that's been a huge thing for me because I'm bad at finishing workouts and runs. And
right.
I've always been, let's find the easiest way possible to achieve the goal. And it's all about optimization and stuff, which is great when we get to the event. But when it comes to training, that's really tough. And I definitely had a big mindset switch in that regard. Earlier in the year, I took on doing the world record for the fastest time to ascend the height of Everest up and down Baldwin Street, which is about 11 hours. and it went terribly wrong. One of the things is, how do you prepare for that? You don't know where you're at. You don't know. It's trial and error. You've got to go do it. And there's a lot of things I'd change. One is I was just too heavy. And being heavy is great for fueling and great for injury prevention, apart from the impact on the most part, because you're able to carry more muscle, and stronger and connected tissue. But as soon as it starts going up and down a hill, it's not great. And I cracked two ribs doing that, just from the impact over and over and over. And couldn't breathe properly, had panic attack breathing because of the ribs, and it all just steamrolled. It was wet, it was 2 degrees, it just wasn't great. And I remember very vividly sitting at the bottom of Baldwin Street crying in a rental car for about 20 minutes, just all the emotions coming out. And I made some notes in my phone because I needed to get something out. And I knew that if I did that, I could just relax for a little while, because I'd feel like I'd made progress. I'd made a plan. It really helped me. It was really tough and it sucked, but it's probably the best thing that's happened this year. Because it showed me that it wasn't a right to be able to go and do these things, and you have to work your ass off, and you have to have a reason and be motivated to do it. And it's not about, it switched that mindset from how good do I need to be to complete the challenge to how good do I need to be the best version of myself. And that was that switch I probably made in the last 6 months, which has been huge. And there's still a lot to work on, but I feel like I'm really proud of that progress from that point to now. And there's a lot of freedom going into this event, because no matter how it goes, because there is some luck involved. There's that element of sometimes things just happen. Like the very best ultra runners in the world, sometimes you DNF after 50K. It's just not happening for you. And that can happen. There's a lot of pressure around that. But I've left no stone unturned. Probably the first time ever, like nothing. And so if it does all go wrong, I've done everything I can, which sort of allows you to go in with some more freedom.
Yeah. So I wanted to talk to you about that Baldwin Street mission. And we've all had, Matt and I both have had events that haven't gone well, that you know, where we haven't finished. We haven't achieved our goal. And that hurts, you know. But like you say, sometimes that's the best thing that can happen to you. How did you deal with that? I'm going to use air quotes, although we're on podcast, you can't see it, but I'm going to use air quotes. Failure. How did you deal with that? I didn't achieve what I set out to do. What impact did that have, and how did you work through that?
Yeah. I think part of it was understanding that I had two separate goals that day, looking back. And one was all around, we created this hashtag called My Everest, that it was all around Everest looks different to everyone, and everyone's climbing their own mountain. And we wanted people to share that and create that understanding that just because you're going through one problem and someone else is going through another doesn't mean one's more important, one's not. It's all really valid. And that's what we wanted to push. And that was huge. And people saw that. And I feel like that made a real impact. And which I come back to is, I feel like we achieved that goal, which is awesome. And so understanding that the running side of things, no one else cares. I got halfway up Everest with broken ribs. Like no one else, everyone else is like, you did amazing. And in my head, I go, that was horrible. I can't believe I failed at that. I think of it as a loss, I guess, rather than a failure. I feel like failure implies that it's the end of the story. And I like the loss, because I will go back and do it at some stage, which is fun and exciting. And Mike said that to me, sat in the car at the bottom. He said, we'll come back. It's fine. But especially taking on the challenges I hadn't lost it one yet. And I definitely went in there complacent. I think it's just understanding that that loss is really tough, but it brings things into perspective and makes the good ones and the ones that go well that much more important and better. And I think part of it as well is just understanding that if you're not failing at things sometimes, what you're doing is probably not quite important enough. You're not pushing far enough. You're not pushing boundaries. You talk about pushing boundaries with events and stuff. if you're ticking them all off, you're not getting the most out of yourself. Mm. And so, I mean, if we're being honest, I should fail at least 50% of the time at these. If not, I should be aiming higher, right? But that's really tough when you're spending 3 months planning each one and doing that. And that's a lot of the pressure. Because the actual event is the fun bit.
There's a lot of mental health charities, you know, there's a lot of NGOs, there's a lot of people who advocate for mental health. How did you get involved with I Am Hope? What was it about them that was different for you?
So I didn't know anyone there personally before I sent an email saying I wanted to be involved and do that vest run. And what stood out to me was the fact that they are a really small team without big fancy office space and all that, without all the government funding, and yet everyone still knows who I Am Hope is and what they do. And that stood out to me. It's a household name across New Zealand, and yet it's a really small team. And that attracted me because I felt like that was me. That was my personality, in the sense that it was all about, it doesn't matter what the goal is, we'll find a way to make it happen if it's important enough, no matter what we have or don't have. And that's what stood out to me firstly. And then I met up with Mike King and a few others, and we had breakfast one morning, and he sort of gave me permission, said, I want you to go out and do these things. If you want to do them, we'll support you. And I went on a school tour, and we went into schools and did these mental health talks. And a lot of one of the main things I Am Hope does, you know, obviously they run Gumboot Friday, which is counseling, but I Am Hope goes into schools and talks to over 250,000 kids a year. And it's the first time most of those kids have ever seen an adult be vulnerable to them. And it's shocking. It's amazing and really scary, because the kids, the teachers are the most surprising, their reactions, because they see all these big tough kids and they don't think some person coming and talking is going to make any difference. And there's just another speaker, you know, there's 10 of them a year, and oh well, they'll be switched off in assembly. And they're all really engaged, and they come up to us and talk to us at the end and ask questions, and it's really different. And the reason is because you have to give them something to hurt you with. You have to open up to them and say, this is what I have struggled with and still struggle with. And you have to be vulnerable to them. And they, especially like teenagers, respect that so much because they don't get it. Everyone in their eyes is trying to be perfect. And they think, oh, their parents are stupid and they don't know anything and this and that. And then you see someone who's, say, when I go in and I'm 23 and could look kind of like them, you know, you still kind of look like them. And they're like, oh, that's kind of like me. And I feel like that. And like they connect differently. And that's one of the main reasons, is it's such a different approach as investing so much into like a younger generation to try and make that lasting change throughout. And I feel like that's really happening.
It's certainly that's the thing, isn't it? It's the, when you work with, and you see, you know, a kid, you know, gosh, you think about, and to use the athlete thing, you think about like a representative, someone who's on a premier hockey team of either sex or either gender, or someone who's on, you know, the first 15, and you think this person's 17 years old and they're 108 kilos and 6'3", you know, and, you know, basically they still have a child's brain, you know, like it's a massive sort of, the physical specimen is very impressive. However, the psychology in there is still very, very vulnerable. It's definitely, yeah, that's the garden that needs watering, right?
And we talk about that with, some of the counselors, I guess, and seeing people. As we went into one school the idea of the person you just described was everyone. And then you see the counselor and you just, they're not going to connect, and one's not going to trust the other. And I think that's what it is, and when we go into schools, there's a wide variety of demographics of the people who go and talk and open up, and there'll be someone you can connect with in some way. And I guess that's what I try and do as well, as not just schools, but generally as I try and be really open as much as I can about the highs and lows of it all. And I sort of, one of the things I come back to is that 654K run at the start of the year. Like, I was in bed crying, having panic attacks the night before with terrible anxiety. And then I woke up the next day and broke the New Zealand distance record, you know, and that's possible. And everyone's capable of doing stuff like that. And it's actually really normal to have anxiety and to struggle with things and for things to be really, really bad at times. And that's like, I think half of the battle is just accepting that actually that's not a bad thing. It's just normal. And it's something we all work through.
Mm-hmm. In fact, if you see someone who that, and that's the thing, isn't it? It's the level to which it affects you. It's an appropriate response to feel like you're having a panic attack when you've got something ahead of you that is like, actually, I don't know if I can accomplish this, and it frightens me. If those people that you see who are always happy or always, you know, there's something, there's actually something fundamentally not well or right about that, you know, if that's just that level of always just like, hey, everything's great all the time, you know, there has to be, for it to be, we're hardwired, aren't we, to feel that. Yeah. if we weren't supposed to feel it, we wouldn't. There's no,
yeah. Mm. I compare it to that idea of when life gets really turbulent for me, I compare it to like mountains and valleys, and it's up down really sharply, sometimes multiple times a day. And there may be some good stuff going on, but there's also you just plummeting low.
Mm.
And that's not what you want, but you also don't want a flat line either.
Mm.
And it's all, I compare it to thinking of like riding a wave, and it should be somewhere in between. And that's sort of the balance I sort of have in my head, and guess I imagine what I sort of aim for, I guess, using different things that can sort of help take care of that mental health.
Absolutely. Did you think, I mean, with the plan you're running in Wynyard Quarter, I just automatically went to it. This isn't a flippant topic. Sorry, my dog is scratching at the door trying to get in. He wants to join in. When do the bars open?
So the way we've structured the loop is there's some flexibility in that, because we do have to go GPS data for the thoughts and stuff. So that's all good. So yeah, the bars are open, but there's also security in the way we structure that. And what actually works quite nicely now is there's probably more crowds outside the bars now than there will be when they open, because everyone can move inside.
Yeah.
And the great thing as well is when you've run 300 plus K, people tend to get out of the way of you pretty quickly.
Especially
with a little group around you. But yeah, I mean, working through the COVID stuff's been really difficult with this, and we've timed it perfectly. It's great. We're just ready to open up as we're starting, and have that flexibility. And we've been quite lucky, and I'm really grateful in that respect. I think part of it as well is it's exciting because all of a sudden everyone can come together and we can do it together. And although I'm the one who's doing that distance, it's not about me, it's about the community of people that are there and doing that, which is really cool.
Mm.
And
it'll add that's the thing, I guess, as well, isn't it? It'll add for those who don't know, the Wynyard Quarter down by our waterfront in Auckland, it is a very sort of, it's very vibrant, it's busy, and it hasn't been for ages, you know. Mm. And it will add a certain, you know, we all get that aid station buzz, right? You know, you come into an aid station and you're like, yeah. So you'll be, you know, that'll be that on steroids, I guess.
Yeah. And we've got live music and stuff happening and DJ sets and all sorts of stuff. Fantastic. Like that when we can. It's one of those things that I think a lot of it is, I want to have fun with it.
Yeah.
It's not the, and that's comes back to what we talked about running supposed to be like a celebration and fun and a party, not another day of running.
Yeah.
Like the whole point is that it's enjoyable, because we're trying to make positive change, you know, and we're trying to have that impact. Yeah.
Tell us about, it's interesting. We all talk about sort of the fun and the privilege that you get to do this, right? This is an actual, it's a very worthy thing you're doing. It's a very, However, your privilege to be able to do it is also incredible. Tell us about your process around gratitude.
I think the thing I struggle with gratitude is, and I work with a performance psychologist, and I really struggle with self-confidence, and I'm my biggest critic, like a lot of people. And I started finding when I went through that classic thing that people do about like writing three things you're grateful for each day. And that took me back to being a kid where from the outside looking in, everything seemed really great. And I felt like I couldn't express how I was really feeling out of fear of seeming ungrateful for those things.
Yeah.
And so the more I started to write down three things that I was grateful for each day, the worse I started to feel, which I felt like was very individual to me because I was just beating myself up, and it felt like pressure building. So I guess I took a little bit of a different approach in that someone asked me one day, what if you could do anything tomorrow, which I could, what would you do? And I didn't have an answer. I was speechless, which was really scary, because you'd think you'd have this huge list of things, and I didn't know. And so I went away and thought about it, and I ended up making three lists. And so the first was things that make me childlike happy, you know, playing with Lego, hitting golf balls a long way, things like that, you know, things that I could control and I could do at any time that made me that raw happiness feeling. And then the next one was things that give me a sense of calm and things that I guess are peaceful, things like journaling and stuff in my own way. I just spam the notes in my phone and then delete it because I tend to like closing it off. And then things like I found meditation really difficult. I'm quite ADHD and want to move. So I found that singing very loudly in the car had the same effect for me. So that's what I started doing lots. And then little bits of breath work and things. So, you know, finding a strategy that worked for me. And the last one was things that build my self-confidence. And I found that I was able to tie being grateful for things into that self-confidence because I guess I had that confidence as a result of being grateful for what that was.
Mm.
And I started to hone in on that and focus on the things. So each night when I get into bed, I just think of one thing I did really well that day. And I sort of have that different, that flip side approach to it, I guess. And the more I started to do that, the more I started to enjoy the things I was doing. And as a result, I started being more grateful for them because I was enjoying them. They weren't chores. They weren't things I had to do. They were the things I got to do. And that was what sort of helped me discover that I was grateful for them, I guess. Very roundabout way of getting there.
No, look at all.
I think that it's so individual, right?
Yeah.
It's that thing of sometimes things are wired a bit differently and you've got to find that pathway through.
And that's the thing. You mentioned that these are all buzzwords or that they're not. They're actually really difficult, complex, dynamic, emotional, physiological states of being. And yet they get tossed out by people, right?
Yeah.
You know, you can have a gratitude journal, you can have a whatever journal, right? You can write in it every day and you can still comport yourself like an absolute, you know, wheelie bin fire but with the inauthenticity of it, you know, like, and it's fashionable to do. And I think your explanation. Yeah, absolutely. It's not roundabout at all, man.
No way.
I think it, and that's what I mean is I think that's the biggest thing I've started to understand is that everyone's going to be really different and there's no one answer. And there's things like journaling is a very common thing which works for people, right? But how do you journal? So for example, I can't write by hand because my brain races and I can't keep up. And that feels like the pressure's building and I'm about to explode. I have to type in however quickly I can and get the thoughts out. Things like that. And I think that's the thing is there's some really great things you can do, but it's finding a way to personalize them. Also, so you own them and they're yours. You don't feel like you're doing something that someone else told you to do. Mm. It's a routine. It's a putting systems in place that work for you. Mm. I had a big thing over the last 3 months. I used to try and wake up every morning and go for a run. I hate running in the morning and I like sleep. Don't know why I was trying to do that, but everyone told me that I should get up in the morning and run. So I kept trying to do it and I kept sleeping in, and then I kept getting annoyed and changed the plan and everything. So now I just wake up at 8 a.m. each day and I don't run until at least noon, and it works. Yeah. It's because I stopped trying to do what everyone else thought was the best plan, and I started actually embracing who I was and stopped trying to change it, because there's nothing wrong with it. I wasn't self-sabotaging or anything, and I just structured a routine that worked for me. And it got really productive and made me happier as a result.
And in the same way, your reaction with meditation. I can't meditate. Oh, you could try and keep going and get frustrated, and actually it becomes counterproductive. But instead, you've discovered you love singing loud in the car. So why not, you know?
And I'm all open to definitely try things, totally. Like have a smorgasbord. Like, I go through stages of using saunas heaps. And I feel like I like that hard reset when I'm struggling with stuff. But when things are good, I just don't like them. So I utilize them in different ways, you know?
I guess the thing too is, like, and it struck me when we were talking, you know, I didn't know how old you are. You know, you said I'm 23 years old. You know, that's the thing. It's like, it's not working for you now. It may work in the future and things may change. In fact, I'm hopeful that when you get to my age or Eugene's age, you know, that things have, do you know that you're not stuck at being like the same mental state or, you know, developmental stage?
You don't know that until later.
No, it's,
That idea of, I wish we knew we were in the good old days while we were in them.
Yeah, absolutely.
No, like, yeah. And I think that's that thing of, I think there's this concept, it's a German word, I can't pronounce it correctly. It's Torschluss panic, and its literal translation is gate shut panic. And its meaning, I love the fact that they have this single word to describe a huge complicated concept. Its meaning is sort of interpreted as that idea that life is passing you by and doors are closing in front of you or behind you, and you don't have that freedom and time's running out. And I really struggled with that, especially it was sort of ingrained with me. If I'd play up sports teams, it was all about how quickly I could do this. There was a plan. It's do this quicker and quicker and quicker. And I think through coincidence of me or as a result of, indirectly, of me having some success this year and running stuff and finding my purpose a little bit more, I guess, and discovering it, this is the first birthday a few months ago that I went, you know what, actually, like, I feel like I'm actually there. Like, I'm in the right mode for the age. And, you know, like, you start to convince yourself that of, and it has nothing to do with whether or not you're actually there. It's your interpretation of it. And that's something I really, like, encourage people to like, process and think about, because it's so hard. And you feel like you should have done this by this age. And it's so ingrained with us. It's all about how quickly can you do this and who's the best and this and that. And actually, everyone's on their own path, and there's a real roundabout way of discovering it.
Man, Oscar Wilde said youth is wasted on the young, but I don't believe that that remark rings true for the general population, because it's wonderful to hear you express that. And you're right, like, you expressing that forward to your peers, to your cohort group, is going to have so much more impact than, you know, someone, you know, like you said, that counselor athlete divide where both parties are looking at each other going,
yeah,
we need to reframe this relationship.
Yeah.
Steve Buscemi, there's that, the actor, there's that, I can't remember what it was, but he's dressed as a kid with a skateboard. Have you seen that meme? And it says Rock Band on his t-shirt. And he's like, hello, fellow students, that kind of thing.
Earlier this year, I got asked what my dream was, which was a very difficult question that took a while to answer. It was actually during the middle of the domain run, and I had some time to think about it, obviously. And I realized that there'd been such a journey up until this point, and obviously still on it, But I went through that stage and I sort of talked about already about how I wanted to be like the best in the world at something. And it was all about me being better than everyone else, being amazing. And then it sort of transitioned into wanting to change the world all on my own, you know, and it'd be about the what I was doing to make a difference. And sort of as I've matured and understood things better and stuff, is now it's kind of probably in the last year, it's probably made that switch. And I've realized that you can't change the world all on your own. But what you can do is inspire and like light a fire in other people to go after what they really care about and do big things for like important reasons and go after it. And when you start inspiring and people go after those things, when you add all that up together, the world does start to change a little bit. And I think that's what I come back to, that idea that you going for a run is just you going for a run. But what other people take away from that and what you take away from that is the thing that has the impact. And that's really cool.
Yeah, I'm just reminded, of the W, and of course, you know, Eugene and I studied just after World War II. The W.H. Auden poem, you know, he says, you know, the thing is that you light an affirming flame, and that's the thing.
Mm. Yeah.
Look, you've got a busy week ahead of you, and it's an understatement. Matt, we're going to ask you a question that we ask everyone who comes on Dirt Church Radio, and that is, Matt Fenn, what's been your greatest run ever?
Oh. It's a tough question. So you'd think I'd say the furthest I've ever run because it's what
it
I
doesn't
do.
Have to be that. This is
definitely
the
not. Or the marathon that started it all. It's a very tough question. I want to say any run that I get runners high because it's so rare, but it's not. You know what? It's running up and down Baldwin Street. Because it sucks so much, but it's had the biggest impact on everything else more than any other run. I think that's it. And I like the fact that the greatest run is probably the one that's gone the worst out of any of them. Yeah.
Brilliant.
Well, look, I mean, if you take this little impart this little tidbit of advice, I mean, for a man who considers that he takes the easy way out of everything, you're kind of doing it wrong, dude.
I got some things to work on there.
Yeah, you've got to.
Oh, I appreciate that. We're sort of embracing the idea that crazy is a compliment.
Yeah, that's right. Totally. That's right. You know, well, look, where can people... people are going to be able to find you over the next little while. And I guess, are you encouraging people to come down and check it out and have a run, or is it something that you're going to need to kind of manage?
Yeah, totally. So I think obviously on the 4th, with the way traffic lights sort of kicking in, all systems go, come down whenever you like. Up until then, if you're around and you want to come down and be involved, that's cool. But we're being very wary of making sure there's not huge crowds there, but are totally open to come down. You know, the last thing you want to be is the next North Shore party, and we're just being wary of all that.
You got any ping pong tables there, bro?
Oh, not quite yet. I mean, my brain's going to feel like one.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and I guess that's the thing is if you're not able to come down and not being able to get involved, then getting involved in social is huge. And I think part of it as well is it's not just about commenting and being involved, but sharing it. Is the biggest thing. And we sort of say that thing of, yes, it could have an impact on you who sees it, but as soon as you share it, all the people you're involved with see it, and it has that knock-on effect, and that's how you start to impact real huge numbers of people. And I think that's the biggest thing I've realized as well, is you're not going to see all that impact, and just trusting that it is there and it is happening. I think it's understanding as well that there's so many people who do get involved and jump on board and want to be a part of it. And I'm so appreciative of that to every single one. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So people can look out for that social media post on the 1st.
It's the minute I start.
Yep.
It's going up.
And then share it, comment.
Yeah. Share it, comment, contribute to that conversation, I guess.
Yeah.
And you can turn on post notifications if you want some little 100K updates. Watch me in a different outfit each day. I assume a lot of listeners will be on Strava.
Yeah.
The maps will all be uploaded to Strava every 24 hours. Still figuring out what we're going to call them. But yeah, we've got to do at least 100K every day. So they'll all be on Strava. Nice and ready for everyone.
Because if it ain't on Strava, then does it count?
Yeah, exactly. Oh, what's your point, man?
It didn't happen, you know?
What's it all about?
Exactly.
All right. So there's plenty of ways people get involved, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Matt, thank you so much. Please rest up. And I'm hopeful that we can make it down. I'm hopeful that I can make it down.
Yeah, I'd love to.
You know, like, we will do everything we can to support and share the word. And thank you for what you're doing. Thank you for your advocacy. Thank you for your activism. And thank you for your co-pop. It's really important.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Thank you, guys. And thanks for the support.
Not at all. Even Rigby's behind you, so there you go.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, that's the main thing.
Thanks, Matt.
Cheers, guys.
Gosh.
I mean, gosh.
Who knew that March 2021 was actually this year?
Yeah. Honestly, last year.
I was blown away. I was like, what? Oh, a bolt from the... No, that was last year. I'm sure it was.
But if you consider it too, you know, we think about like... So we had Tarawera. By the time we got back into Auckland, we were in level 3 for a little short, sharp lockdown. And then we had a bit of March and then another lockdown and then March and then here we go. So yeah, no, it's been a year of four halves, man. I tell you what. Look, I've been a mental health professional, a registered mental health professional for the last 21 years. And I learnt a lot today. Mm. You know what I mean? Mm. It's easy for me to go, I've been there, I've done that, I've got the t-shirt. I learnt a lot. And I thank Matt for his... I think what I really like about Matt is how he uses running as a means to start conversations, not as... he's a runner who does something. I mean, he is a runner, obviously.
Mm.
But he's someone who runs and he uses running to spark, you know, it's as a form of connection. It's really amazing.
Yeah, it's quite extraordinary, isn't it? Thank you so, so much, Matt.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, go well, brother. And 23 years old as well. It's like, oh, I mean, come on, man. Slow your roll, bro. No, keep going. Look, thank you very much for tuning in. We're on social media at Dirt Church Radio. You can email us at dirtchurchradio@gmail.com and you can find us on all the podcast platforms. Like and subscribe if you fancy, leave a review, and you can download direct from the website, which is dirtchurchradio.com.
Don't forget to write in with your greatest run ever. It doesn't have to be the time you saved a marine mammal. It can just be a run that you enjoyed, run that's special to you, sings for
doesn't
you.
Have
we
to
have
be
some
even...
we have had some beauties where we off you know. Everyone's a winner, but you know, there's been some beauties over the years. So don't feel, although Eve did set the bar very high just there, you know, don't feel you have to hit that. You know, that's not a prerequisite. Send them into us. And by the way, we did have our backlog over lockdown, but that is, we're working our way through it. We're nearly at the bottom. So you need to get send them in if you want us to keep having them.
Oh, man. Thank you to our sponsors. Scott Running, Further Faster, and Cieli. Thank you to our Patreon patrons and Wild Things. And thanks to our editor, Kieran. We've got a great show lined up for you next week, so please tune in then.
Ka kite anō.
Thanks, Rigby.